Sun King from the Beatles. Since we're just a couple of hours away from the big eclipse of 2017, thought I'd play a little something to go along with that. And yes, I realize a lot of folks are sending me hoodoo-related songs, and there are hundreds of them. In this segment, we'll talk about the central role that hoodoo has had in the development of R&B and rock and roll, as well as how hoodoo has evolved into modern times and the efforts to suppress it over the years, which have been pretty dramatic. We're talking with Tony Kail, author of A Secret History of Memphis Hoodoo. A little bit later, we'll open up the phone line, so stick around with more Coast to Coast AM. So, Tony, before the break, I had asked about cases where it appears there were negative effects after hoodoo had been invoked, if you would continue the story.
Sure. The story involved a minister in Memphis who had allegedly crossed an individual in a congregation who, because of her fear of what he had done and possibly because of the effect of what he had done, ended up in a mental health facility. The woman's children, two adults, a man and his sister, were living in Coldwater, Mississippi, and once this had happened to their mother, they explained that they started praying and that God told them that the next time that it stormed, that he wanted them to do like David did with Goliath and to take a number of stones and go slay Goliath. Well, they decided that the next time that it stormed and that they heard thunder, that this was a sign from God. And they took a shotgun and five shells and traveled to Memphis to this church and murdered this minister. And, you know, again, the whole catalyst for this was that there was fear that someone had conjured their mother. And, you know, it's just one of many stories that we've seen in Memphis history of where a fear of conjure has created a really serious situation.
And the flip side of that, the idea of a love spell, which is one of the most prominent uses that you mentioned in the book, is people want somebody to love them. How would that work? They go to the shaman or the practitioner, and what happens?
Well, you know, in the practice of hoodoo, we see two forms of magic being practiced. One of them concerns the law of contact, and the other concerns what is known as the law of similarity. Basically, these two principles teach that anything that has been in contact with someone will still affect them. It also teaches that anything that is similar to someone can affect them. So a root worker may say, okay, if you want this particular individual to fall in love with you, bring me an article of their clothing. Or I'm going to give you some powder that contains various herbal agents and magical agents, and I want you to sprinkle this across their doorway, where when they step across it, it will magically affect them. And so we saw this principle repeated throughout Memphis hoodoo history, the use of various herbs that bring about love, the use of various rituals and artifacts. So yeah, the focus of bringing about love is a very common practice among some of the root work practices.
I found one of the most entertaining parts of your book is the sort of the modern history of hoodoo and how it evolved in Memphis, you call Mojo City, stores, and how it was sold openly. But even well into the 20th century, as you document, there were efforts to suppress it, concerns about it.
Yeah, you know, in one part of the book, I talk about what I call the war on hoodoo. And, you know, this actually started back in the late 1800s. We know that about 1861, one of the first media reports came out in local newspapers where the reports were calling practitioners of hoodoo voodooist, and in Memphis sometimes they would call practitioners Congos. And the fear was that Memphis was going to become like New Orleans, and that any African-related healing tradition was equivalent to some sort of malevolent form of voodoo. And there were actually reports warning families to lock your homes because the voodooist will break in your windows and steal your children. And, you know, this carried on for several years, actually even all the way up through the late 60s. We found early reports where police would go into various settlements in downtown Memphis, and they would shake down root workers, and they would take their bags, their roots, their herbs, and different artifacts, and they would burn them in incinerators. And in many cases, the reports would talk about how police officers would lecture them on these silly superstitions that come from Africa. And then we have more serious situations, such as years later, where we would see a number of root workers accosted. We even had one record where one particular root worker was assaulted, and this was portrayed in the press as a positive thing because these were allegedly, you know, these malevolent people that were bringing this god-awful paganism to the Mid-South.
So you have cops raiding these stores, cops going after practitioners, shaman, things of that sort. I guess in many cases, rightfully so, because charlatans, hokum, rip-off artists who infiltrate this and promise things that they can't possibly deliver on.
Well, you know, there are those charlatans, as you find in any culture, and there were those charlatans that would you know, promise individuals in the community that they could perform specific feats, all the while simply taking money. And in most cases, they were basically taking money from people in their own community and bilking those folks. You know, we saw at one point where this actually changed how some of the shops that sell hoodoo-related items would advertise, because instead of advertising this powder as some sort of magical artifact or this candle, they were then known as curios. And that way there was no liability in promising that it would have some sort of magical effect. And so, you know, if you came into my store to buy powder or oils or candles, there was a warning that, hey, what you're buying is a curio or a curious artifact, and there's no guarantee that it's going to have any kind of magical substance to it, you know, and that way it sort of would just cover yourself from any sort of liability from the item not working.
Let's talk a bit about the role of hoodoo in the eventual development of rock and roll. Right up the top of the hour, I played a song from B.B. King, who, of course, knew Beale Street well. It seems like every major blues artist, R&B artist, came through Memphis. It is the home of the blues, and they all took a little hoodoo with them, and it eventually filtered into what became rock and roll. It's in so many songs, I couldn't count them all, but talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, you know, when we talk about the beginning of the blues out of Memphis, we have to talk about Beale Street. And while Beale Street today is, you know, an entertainment district, we know that back in the day, where a lot of the great blues musicians were cutting their chops there and playing local juke joints, that root work and hoodoo was very prevalent. And in fact, there were reports from local physicians in Memphis that were complaining that they were losing patients to root workers on Beale Street. So we do know there was a lot going on with hoodoo on Beale Street. A lot of famous root workers and conjurers. We have one of the more famous out of Memphis, a guy known as Dr. Scissors, that operated out of Beale Street. And It was interesting because blues music started to reflect the hoodoo culture. And, you know, in 2017, we might look at that as some sort of gimmick, you know, to play a song and talk about a particular theme. But the reality was hoodoo was the reality in the lives of many African Americans. And so you would hear lyrics referring to things like mojo bags and black cat bones. And not only were musicians singing about hoodoo, but many of the Memphis musicians actually practiced hoodoo. We know that the famous blues musician Big Memphis Ma Rainey, Lillie Mae Glover, was a well-known root worker. And you would hear songs from musicians not only talking about elements of hoodoo, but famous personalities. W.C. Handy and the Memphis Jug Band sang about Aunt Carolyn Dye, a famous root worker out of Newport, Arkansas. And so hoodoo very much was part of daily life and sort of permeated the grassroots of blues music out of Memphis.
And a lot of the references would be kind of obscure and sly, you know, the terms that we would not recognize as hoodoo.
Absolutely, yeah. There, for instance, there's, you know, some of the more overt ones of, you know, got my mojo working and things like that. But then there were a couple of musicians that you really had to know the culture to know what they were singing about. For instance, I think it may be Johnny Temple that did a song called Two-Headed Woman. And on the surface, that sounds just like it is, a two-headed woman. But in the hoodoo culture, to have two heads means that you have the ability to create charms or amulets, and you have the ability to destroy amulets. You can do positive work, and if needed, sometimes negative or malevolent work. And so, again, a lot of veiled references there, unless you were familiar with the culture.
We had a song that was written by Screamin' Jay Hawkins earlier, I guess, Muddy Waters, you reference in the book, as people who came through and picked up a little bit of it. Its reach is so much further than I would have imagined.
Yeah, it is fascinating. And, you know, and once you become familiar with the culture and you start looking back at historical blues songs, you find hoodoo references just peppering many of the great blues songs that we have out of the Delta. And it's fascinating because it provides a whole nother layer of understanding to many of these songs. You know, Memphis has a artifact that we believe is specifically Memphis-based, and that was an artifact known as the Nation Sack. And the Nation Sack was a bag used by females, similar to almost what would be a female mojo bag. And we only saw this historically in Memphis in the beginning. We did recently find reports of where it was seen in the Delta. And in fact, someone had observed in an old journal where they saw one on a ship coming out of a steamboat coming out of New Orleans. So we do know it was sort of southern regional. But with that being said, you know, we would hear songs like Robert Johnson's Come Into My Kitchen, and he would mention about taking money from his woman's Nation Sack. And again, sort of an obscure reference, but once you know what that is, you realize, wow, that was actually part of what was going on in the culture at that time.
A famous name, anybody who's familiar with Memphis, is Schwab. Tell me about that. You have a lot of stuff in the book about Schwab and the role in the development of what is hoodoo today.
Yes, Schwab's on Bill Street is a fascinating place. In fact, they're one of the oldest businesses left in Memphis. Schwab started out as somewhat of like a dry goods store. They carried a little bit of everything, and it was started by a Jewish family in Memphis on Bill Street, and they provided a lot of goods and products to the African-American community, when a lot of folks in the African-American community couldn't get some of the items they offered. And, you know, when Beale Street was initially created by Robert Church, the South's first black millionaire, it was created as a entertainment district for black Memphians, because there was nowhere to go to enjoy, you know, entertainment and food, you know, that was geared toward the African-American community. And Schwab opened up on Beale Street, and they offered items to the community. And at one point, they started carrying a lot of hoodoo-related curios, and they carried them for many years, and actually still do carry some of the hoodoo-related curios. And they have the family has a fascinating history involved with hoodoo and some of the customers they've had come through their doors through the years. One of my favorite stories that the family tells is about a gentleman who came into the store and said that he was a businessman, and he was seeking something that could help him have financial success in a particular business deal. And he told him, he said, you know, I don't really believe in this stuff, but I'll give it a try. And so, you know, the family never prescribed anything, but they would say, you know, some people say if you use this particular candle and this particular incense, it will bring about this particular result. Now, that's what some people say. And so he purchased some candles and some oils, and he came back a few weeks later and explained to a member of the family that, hey, this stuff really worked. You know, I had good luck after using it, and I want more. And so over time, he would continue to come to the store and buy products. And at one point, an employee in the store said, you know, the gentleman who comes and buys those products, he has sort of a odd scent to him. And the next time he came in, there was a member of the Schwab family that kind of got close to him and noticed, yeah, he does have a strange scent. And they said, so how do you use your products? And he said, oh, you know, I use the candles that you prescribe, and the oil, when I get home, I drink the oil and take it all in. And of course, you know, the oils are typically used as anointing oils to anoint candles and various objects, heavy alcohol and various herbal concoctions. So there was a great misunderstanding there. But the Schwab family has, like I said, been there for over 100 years, and is a real landmark in the Memphis area as far as hoodoo history.
You mentioned a couple of places in the book, too, that hoodoo becomes popular with gamblers, who, you know, are among the most superstitious people of all. I've seen people here in Las Vegas, they won't change their socks if they're on a winning streak, things of that sort. So I could see gamblers availing of hoodoo items, whether it works or not.
Absolutely. You know, I had interviewed a former employee of Schwab's on Beale, and she told me some of her most regular customers were ones that were going to the Greyhound Dog Track in West Memphis, Arkansas, just right across the bridge, because they'd stop in and want to get a bag or want to get a root that would help bring them luck. And today, in 2017, we see Champion's Pharmacy off of Elvis Presley, right down from Graceland. Old pharmacy there that carries a couple of different curios, and one of the things they carry is casino oil. And the owner there, Dr. Champion, tells me that there are folks who will go to Tunica, Mississippi, which is kind of close to the area, to the casinos, and they'll stop off and buy casino oil and a couple of roots and things like that to bring about luck. And, you know, on the surface, you know, a lot of us may look at that as, well, that's kind of odd. But, you know, how many of us through the years have carried, you know, a rabbit's foot or a Lucky Charm? And how many well-known baseball players, you know, as you know, wear a lucky sock or have right. a particular glove they wear every game?
All right, Tony, we have to take one more break. Tony Kale, Secret History of Memphis Hoodoo. We'll open up the phone lines with your questions and comments in a moment. Stick around. This is a song you can play after the eclipse is over. It's Back in the Sunshine Again by Paul McCartney from an album called Driving Rain, which has a lot of good stuff. We're talking with Tony Kail about his book, A Secret History of Memphis Hoodoo. A lot of stuff still to cover, but we'll be going to the phone lines with your calls and questions and comments right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Tony, before we go to the phones, I wanted to ask, at the end there, you mentioned about Elvis. There's a hoodoo shop right around the corner from Graceland. I can't think of an Elvis song that has a hoodoo reference in it, but there must be one.
It's lost on me. I'm more of a blues man myself, so I respect the Elvis, but not familiar with a tune that would be related.
Well, maybe somebody in our audience knows. There's no stories about Elvis popping into the shop to pick up a curio or two, though, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
You know, we mentioned about the eclipse being today, hours from now. Is there an astrological or astronomical aspect to hoodoo?
Well, we do know that in the 40s that there were aspects. There were some aspects of European spirituality that started really showing in the hoodoo culture. In fact, you could find it at some of the different bookstores and candle shops and things, books with a very strong European influence that did mention things such as planetary hours, and you would actually find some of the European spell books, or grimoires as they would call them, available to root workers and conjurers.
Let's go to the phones. First time caller Dave in Stanton, Tennessee. Hi, Dave. You're on with Tony Kail.
Hey, Tony. Down the road from me here in Stanton, I grew up in Memphis, and we always, as a kid, knew to stay away from Voodoo Village. I was wondering if you did any of your research in the Voodoo Village Boxtown area near the Chuckalissa archaeological site.
Hey, that's a great question. We have an area in Memphis that for years has been known locally as Voodoo Village. In fact, there's a chapter on the book in the book about it. But Voodoo Village is not, that's a name that people have given the area. In fact, the place is known as the St. Paul Spiritual Temple, and it is a African American spiritual temple. But over the years, the place was given the nickname as Voodoo Village, and that became sort of a local urban trip for teenagers to drive by it and, you know, scare girls and things like that. But I know the family that lives there and established the temple, and it has nothing to do with voodoo. Through the years, there have been all sorts of horror stories of, you know, people in fear of human and animal sacrifices and things like this. But in all actuality, it's very much built on a lot of the New Orleans spiritualist traditions. And there's not anything malevolent in regards to any of that going on there. But that is a very popular local urban trip, as they would call it.
Thanks for the call, Dave. We'll go to the wildcard line, Charles in Texas. Good morning, Charles.
Hey there. This is great. Tony, Mr. Kail, I think I probably can help you a little bit, but I think you can help me in a way to find some of my family. My aunt used to have a club, a blues club, and my dad's sister-in-law, basically. He used to have a blues club off Beale Street, down an alley, and back in the late 50s, early 60s. My dad was a Marine, it was technically off limits. Of course, he ignored that, but that area was off limits for him. But he would go over there to my aunt's club, and the interesting thing here is that my great aunt was a voodoo kind of voodoo queen or voodoo priestess, whatever, and off in Jamaica. Because my dad married he got together with a Jamaican girl, when he was a teenager. That's how we ended up in this world. But I'm having a hard time because my dad was killed last year, and I'm having a real hard time finding the people. I mean, there's a connection between with hoodoo and definitely connection with hoodoo and voodoo on Beale Street and at the blues club. My aunt had a really great blues club, had the likes of Louis Armstrong and all that over there. And so I just wondered if there's some way maybe I can get together with you later on and maybe because you probably know a lot more than I do even about how to find you know, the owners of these clubs and stuff. My dad, I never was at the club, but my dad told me all that.
Charles, do you know the name of the club?
Yeah, I don't even know the name of the club, but I'm hoping that maybe we can, you know, zero it down, you know, focus in on it and find out, because there might be, there's probably a bunch of clubs back in those days. One of the things I know, he described it, and he said it was on an alley. You had to go down an alley.
I'll tell you what we'll do, Charles. We'll hook you guys up so you can communicate by email, and I don't know if Tony can help you, but he might be able to direct you where he can.
Anybody would know, it probably would be Tony, because I don't think anybody else is keeping track of the connections between.
All right, well, we'll try to hook the two of you guys up. I'm going to ask Tricia to get your contact info, and we're going to pass it on to Tony, and we'll see what happens from it. But thanks for calling in. East of the Rockies, Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joe, how you doing? Is Joe there?
Yeah. Hi, Tony.
Hi.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I have two questions. One would be, you mentioned earlier about the incorporation later on of the Psalms and Moses. So I'd ask you about, did they reference angels, given, you know, the angelic themes in some of the Psalms, such as Psalm 91? And my second question would be the tie-in to the French language itself. Like, I remember hearing the rosary done in French by nuns in a church when I was up in Montreal, and it sounded so much more mystical than it does in English.
You know, that's it's a very, very fascinating question. The elements in regards to the French, you know, there was a movement for a while in pushing some of the European grimoires in some of the bookstores and candle shops, as we spoke of. And there was a gentleman out of Chicago named DeLawrence, and he put out a lot of, he reproduced a lot of European grimoires and put out different books. And some of them actually did have a French element to that. You know, we saw at one particular point, it was almost like a cornucopia of different spiritualities from different aspects of European spiritualism to even aspects of European witchcraft and aspects of African religion, all mixed in a lot of the books and things. And, you know, it kind of all could best be summed up in the words there was a company that put out a hoodoo curio catalog, and their whole moniker was whatever works. And so whatever was available at the time and whatever worked, regardless of whatever the cultural background was something that many healers and many conjurers sort of put in their spiritual toolkit. So we did see a combination of all these.
Thanks, Joe. Was there a second question?
Yeah, well, I would just also ask about just how much, like with the plantation owners, would they have also adopted this? They feared it, but at the same time, would some of them adopted these practices themselves?
There have been some historical record of where some plantation owners have. In fact, we have a famous root worker in Tennessee that was known as Dr. Jack. And Dr. Jack was really well known as being able to perform healings. And in fact, the plantation owner where he was kept, essentially, allowed him to go to other plantations and do healing work, not only on slaves, but plantation owners. And when the state of Tennessee was going to pass a law that said you had to have a license to be able to practice medicine on plantations, there was actually a group of people, and some of them were plantation owners, that went to the state of Tennessee to have this rule change, because there was the belief that, you know, he was such a successful root worker and such a successful healer that everyone should be able to take part in what he provided.
Thanks, Joe. So, you know, as you describe in the book, Tony, it's primarily African-American, at least its roots. What about today? You know, I know that there are stores that you describe in Memphis that sell stuff. I know online, because I looked it up for the interview, that there are places online where they sell curios and things of that sort. Is it a much broader audience than African Americans? There's a lot of, you know, curiosity about different kinds of spiritual beliefs these days.
Absolutely. And, you know, is kind of going back to where we started with this, hoodoo is such a fluid culture. You know, we saw it manifest in different geographic regions, and the hoodoo that you might see in Kentucky, or even what is known as powwowing in Pennsylvania, would be practiced among non-African Americans at times. And today, hoodoo is enjoying somewhat of I don't want to say revival, because it's never left us, but it is enjoying an explosion of sorts. And we see people of all different ethnicities embracing hoodoo, practicing hoodoo, and really trying to get back to these traditional practices. And just sort of a side note, I think, is, you know, as we see as a society, the growth of the dangers of some of the medicines that were offered through, through the masses that contain all these warnings and side effects, I think a lot of people are searching for those traditional healing remedies that have been practiced for, you know, hundreds of years and don't have all the side effects that you would see on a commercial that had, you know, a 3-hour warning of all the side effects of that particular medicine.
Right. Jerry in Omaha, Nebraska, good morning. You're on with Tony Kale.
Good morning. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Great.
All right, I just have a question. You might have spoke on it already. I just got on. Just got home, so I didn't hear the whole show. But I was wondering, did your research show any connection between Judaism and hoodoo? And the reason I ask that is because there are a couple of things. And when I was reading through the scriptures, the prophet Ezekiel in particular, he was told to cut his hair and to divide it into three different sections, and then take a third part of it and scatter it to the wind, a third part to burn, and a third part to chop around it with a sword. And it was supposed to symbolize the different calamities that were to come upon the nation. And then also the Passover, with the lamb's blood going above the doorpost to protect against the death angel. So I was just wondering, is there any connection that you've seen between those two?
Well, you know, we did see some Judaic elements in some of the sort of mass marketed hoodoo books and literature that came out. We would see elements related to, various seals and various spirits mentioned in Jewish sacred texts. Interestingly enough, there is some of the companies that released or that manufactured a lot of hoodoo curios in Memphis are Jewish and were Jewish owned companies. And interestingly enough, you know, we found record where a lot of times you would find families of Jewish heritage that essentially felt the need to offer some of these products because they also were in diaspora. They also were people removed from their home. And so there were a lot of commonalities and a lot of empathy between the Jewish and African American community in the South at some points. So I'm sure somewhere along the line there were elements of ritual and practices that sort of bumped up against each other in various communities, and one took from the other.
Thank you, Jerry, for that call. Try to get one more in. JD in Indianapolis. Good morning, JD.
Good morning, George. Hey, Tony.
Hey.
I was wondering if you knew of any connection of Mr. Mojo Rice and Jim Morrison, and whether or not he employed any kind of voodoo. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, as far as specifically hoodoo, I don't know. We do know that there is a lot of documentation that Morrison was very much fascinated by metaphysics and aspects related to esoteric religions. But as far as Southern-based hoodoo, I don't know. I don't have any knowledge of that.
Let me ask you this, Tony. What's been the reaction to your book so far from practitioners? You've had to talk to a lot of them to get information. Are they okay with the book, or there's no one who's sticking herbs in a sack with your name on it anywhere, are they?
No, it's been a very pleasant, warm reception. And in fact, at our book release, we actually did our book release at Schwab on Beale. And I had an elderly lady walk in and during the signing, and she was sort of eyeballing me, and you know, I just kind of got this feeling that, oh, she's kind of looking me over and wondering, you know, who am I and who am I to write about this? And she walks up to me and sits down and she says, keep telling the truth. Keep telling our story, because this is our story. And I found that there are a lot of elders in the community that need and want their story told. Because in the end, hoodoo is not all about black cat bones and mojo bags, but is about the survival of a people through slavery and through segregation and through poverty and through hard times. And it's been my hope that I would always come off as being respectful and wanting to tell their story, not my story or anyone else's.
Yeah, I mean, the larger picture is it's part of African American history in America, you know, and what they have endured.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in effect, it's all of our stories.
Tony Kale, it's been awesome. I really enjoyed the book, A Secret History of Memphis Hoodoo. I hope there's a follow-up, and I hope you'll let us know about it.
Absolutely, and I thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, and thanks also to my earlier guest, Robert Hastings, UFOs and Nukes, and to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Michael Cosio, Tricia Pepe, our webmaster tonight, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galati, and Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back next Sunday night. Good night, everyone.